My guest began his early musical development on classical piano and clarinet before moving to saxophone at the age of 12, before completing his Bachelor of Music with honours at the Sydney Conservatorium of Music in 2007. He undertook an exchange program in Oslo, Norway, where he studied composition for award-winning composer Geir Lisne. In 2009, he received the Bell Award for the Young Australian Jazz Artist of the Year. His diverse music interests are reflected in the variety of bands that he leads and writes for, bands like The Vampires, The Jeremy Rose Quartet, The Strides, Push, as well as the subject of our meeting tonight, the exciting saxophone quartet Compass. Jeremy Rose, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thanks for having me on, Frank.
Jeremy, who are your major musical influences, Jeremy? What have you learned from them?
From the local scene, I guess I could talk about my first saxophone teacher, who was Blaine Whittaker, who's quite a notable figure on the Australian jazz scene, and was James Morrison's saxophonist for many years before he relocated to Hong Kong. And I actually grew up on the Northern Beaches in Manly, so I do have a connection to the North Side somewhat, and I went to school at North Sydney Boys. North Sydney actually has a fantastic, or at least when I was there, had a fantastic jazz program under the direction of Saul Richardson, who's a guitarist. There I was lucky enough to meet a lot of musicians that I'm actually still working with today. Guys like Jackson Harrison, Simon Frenzy, Dale Gorfinkel, and some guys that still play a fair bit around the area, Scott Simpkins. So North Sydney Boys was a great environment to be fostered in, and I was exposed to a lot of great musicians on the scene. So I was lucky enough to study with, you know, many of the great, excellent jazz saxophonists in Sydney, including Dave Thiek, Roger Mannins. I was studying with Jake Mannerix for quite a long time, Sean Coffin, you name it. I would actually hunt them down after gigs and you know, pick their brains and eventually have private lessons with them. Yeah, I was also studying piano with Sean Wayland, and I had one lesson with Mac McMahon. So, you know, I was exposed to a lot of fantastic musicians. It's funny, actually, Sean was a teacher who was trying to encourage me not to become a jazz musician, because he'd look in his diary and he'd realize that he didn't have enough money to pay his rent. But so I'm glad I've pursued this path of jazz, even though it is fraught with
financial danger,
financial risks. And, you know, I also met the saxophonist Christina Leonard, who's a fantastic classical saxophonist and, you know, teaches at the conservatorium, but also works with the SSO, the Ballet Orchestra, and Sydney Solos, and many other different classical settings. So from there, I guess it was the seed of the Compass group, which I guess formed about 5 years ago.
As a musician and an improviser, how do you measure the success of your performance or your recording personally?
I guess I view my own performance or recordings as more of a documentation rather than, you know, a finite, definitive transaction of where I, you know, where I'm setting my goals. Because, you know, as an artist, you continually growing, and you can never rest on your laurels and become comfortable with your own playing. Otherwise, you know, you're destined to become stagnant and you know. And like all the great jazz musicians and the masters, they're always pursuing different things and different sounds. Look at Miles Davis's career and you know, the short but pertinent career of John Coltrane. To tell you the truth, I actually find it difficult listening to older recordings of myself. And, you know, you do realize that, well, thankfully, through some hard work, you're actually, you know, heading towards where you want to go in, you know, artistically, and, you know, as far as your saxophone sound and technique and your language and trying to develop your ideas. So, yeah, I guess this Compass record and possibly the next Vampires CD, which is coming out early next year, would be my definitive album
today. If you weren't a musician, what do you think you'd be?
Well, I guess I was lucky enough to have a really fantastic education at North Sydney Boys, and I was actually thinking of becoming a doctor. I had an interview for a degree in medicine at Adelaide University on the same day as my audition at Sydney Conservatorium, so I had to make a choice right then. But
So that's where Sean Whelan is coming
I should have listened to him. I was interested in a lot of things. I was really good at maths, and I don't know, I hope perhaps that's helped me in my composition. At the moment I'm actually doing a master's in composition, so that's where I'm heading, more and more towards composing. I
Yes.
guess they go hand in hand with my saxophone
Yes,
performance.
yes. What's more important for you, that people understand what you play or enjoy the music that you play?
I can only hope that my music reaches out to people and touches them in some way. Whether they understand it is another thing. I mean, when I listen to a piece of Indian music, for example, I can enjoy it, but by no means understand it because the language is quite foreign to me. I mean, even after writing this River Meeting Suite for the Indian CD, it's still challenging for me to listen to music from a different culture that I don't understand. So, yeah, I hope people just love the music. I mean, music can mean so many different things to so many people. As long as it touches people in its own way, whether whether it's provoking in a good or bad way for that matter. Perhaps they don't like. I mean, that's not for me to make that judgment. It depends on their tastes and own values and backgrounds as a listener. Yeah, I can just hope that my music does affect people in some way. Hopefully for the good. Yeah.
We're going to ask Jeremy just a little bit about this particular piece, which is called the Nocturne, and you're the composer, of course, of these five movements from the River Meeting Suite. Tell us how this fits into the whole suite, Jeremy.
This piece conjures up a hot, steamy night, such as tonight, or perhaps even hotter if you're in India. The melody is really elongated, quite long, very long phrases, and I guess it's meant to conjure up that sort of dreamy state. It's sort of like a love song, but I don't want to call it a love song. It's a night music.
I wanted to certainly just touch base on the Quartet Compass, because the first album that you put out focused on tango music, but this time around it's clearly focused on Indian music. What's the driving force behind this change? Is Compass setting out to explore a whole host of multicultural musics and how they collide with jazz, or?
Yeah, I guess a focus of the group is concentrated on cross-cultural collaborations, of course, with a focus or a background of jazz and related music. We're very much interested in the sonic possibilities of saxophones, which can be quite luscious. The first CD worked perfectly with piano, accordion, and acoustic guitar, that of Marcello Maio and Julian Kerwin. Also, we've made use of professional relations and different networks. Matt Odion had a connection with those players just mentioned through the Gypsy Cabaret band, Monsieur Camembert. I've seen Bobby Singh play for a number of years with Sandy Evans and in other various settings. And so we took this new project on as part of a performance we did out at Campbelltown Arts Centre about 3 years ago. I wrote one of the pieces for that performance, and from there we decided we really want to make a full album of this. And I guess Sandy was an obvious choice for composing the work because she's worked already with the Indian musicians. Yeah, it's been quite an intriguing and a steep learning curve for myself, given that, trying to write Indian music is, without having studied it, is kind of like trying to write Baroque music without ever having studied Bach. So,
So your collaborators here, Bobby Singh and Sarangan,
Sri Ranganathan.
those two gentlemen, how did they react then when you're bringing your compositions to the table and sort of asking them to put a classical Indian spin on it?
Well, it's due to the openness of these musicians and their generosity that we could actually come together and trying to find a common ground that would, you know, make this collaboration so fruitful. I was lucky enough to meet with Sarangan several times over the compositional process. You know, after having written something, I would play it to him and you know, just try to understand whether that would, for a start, work on his instrument, and how close was that to the language that he was more familiar with, that being Carnatic music. Actually, I should point out that, you know, Sarangan is just an absolute incredible musician. He's skilled and educated in both Hindustani, which is classical Indian music from the north, and Carnatic music from the south, and they're quite radically different. In the north is much more improvised in style, and the one from the south has a very long and clearly composed music that's, you know, quite a lot more strict. And the rhythmic dialogue in the music of the south is, you know, it's such a strong tradition. So to actually write something that's genuine in that style was near impossible for me. So I have tried to appropriate what I was hearing in the music and try and allow us to use some embellishments and other performance techniques to try and create that language.
And of course, the tones of the soprano, the alto, the tenor, the baritone, as you say, are complementing the other sounds of the sitar and the tabla here very, very well, aren't they?
Sure. I did try to take Indian-inspired melodies and actually work from a jazz harmonic perspective, give the textures and harmonies a kind of a different light. And I think this whole project has actually identified a lot with who we are as Australian, living in such a multicultural society. You know, it's only common for us to have these sorts of cultural projects.
And of course, once they've infiltrated someone, it spreads. For example, Sandy, I think, started getting into this 3 or 4 years ago, and all of a sudden, then, you know, Matt Keegan, yourself, I know Bobby Singh has collaborated with a number of jazz artists over the years as well, and it just seems to be something that's infectious, I guess, the idea that jazz can meet these other musics. And that's really where the interesting parts of jazz are being created today in Australia, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say that.
I mean, even your other group, The Vampires, explores multicultural musics in its own way, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure. You know, being an Australian jazz artist means that we're actually somewhat removed from the jazz continuum of being an African-American or even an American classical music as it's considered today. It's only right that we do look to other cultures for inspiration. And, you know, I guess given our proximity to Asia, this one's quite relevant. You know, if you go out to Fairfield, you're going to, or, you know, Sydney's West, you're going to hear these sounds coming from the shops. You know, so it has a lot to do with who we are as an Australian.
Are there any rules for a jazz musician? And if so, are there any that you break?
I think jazz music is music that it has an element of spontaneity that isn't found in other musics. You know, other music can be soothing or it can make you dance, or, you know, it can be good to have in the background. But jazz has that spontaneity that makes you really, you know, makes your ears stick up and makes you want to, you know, try and hear what's going on, you know. And and I think jazz musicians have an imperative to continually search and try and be somehow on the edge and trying to push themselves into other areas that they might not have searched before, because it, you know, it is, as I've already mentioned with the masters, the jazz masters, they're always continually seeking for something new. You know, you could say it's more of a journey than the destination.
That's right. And for others, it becomes an ongoing search for their own personal expression too, within a particular style, doesn't it? So there's all these other different facets of the music and how it can be approached. within the music itself.
Yeah, I mean, look what Bernie McGann does. I mean, he successfully re-identifies himself within, I guess, subcategory of jazz, you know, and he's continually reinventing what he does in his own way and language. So
we've heard that it was maybe possible in your formative years to become a doctor. What's your long-term goal as a musician? Where would you like to be in, say, 15 years' time?
To continue to search for the truth in music. You know, I'm thoroughly enjoying being able to have my music presented to an ever increasingly wider audience. And as I said before, my main goal is to really connect with people. You know, I'm hoping to expand what I'm doing. As I said, I'm focusing on composition at the moment with my master's studying at the Sydney Conservatorium. You know, the sky's the limit with composition as far as, you know, other groups to write for, including classical groups, orchestras, you know, film scores, the like. Yeah, I'm really hoping to foster the groups that I'm working with now and perhaps expand my composition horizons, and who knows what's laying overseas. Perhaps there's
any seeds for the next cross-cultural collaboration for Compass?
I'm not sure if I want to reveal it yet because it's just a seed.
Fair enough. Jeremy Rose, thanks for joining us in the studio tonight.
Thanks for having us.